Welcome to the Department of Homeland Security, the officially unofficial podcast for the boys. I almost said for Homelander. I mean, you know, if he wants to pay us, he's got that VOD money. He could probably afford it.
Yeah.
We're willing to switch sides.
Kind of a problematic sponsor, I think, for us. But
Yeah. You know, we'll just find a new audience. That's how it'll go. That's how these things work. No, for the boys on Amazon Prime streaming. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
We're here to do our season two wrap up, which I think is going to take the form of a big feedback episode, because when we went and we looked at the feedback, all that stuff in there kind of covered every point, and we figured let's give the audience their say instead of us just blabbering.
It's honestly, as a podcast who kind of made the decision to be exclusively show only, like neither one of us is going to read the comic books. I don't know. That might change for next season. Maybe one of us does. But like, it's honestly intimidating searching for show news about this because, you know, or even like it's even dangerous considering material that the show has apparently leapfrogged but has not been part of the comics yet, or stuff in the comics the show's leapfrogged that hasn't been in the show yet. Because I've seen in other shows like The Walking Dead and the Game of Thrones where, boy, you think they've discarded that material and they just rework it for something else, and now everybody's mad at you for doing spoilers. So it's honestly tough to go and research like what's coming up in season three, because we got casting news and they're attached to characters who already have plots and comics, and it's like,
yeah.
So, you know, the listeners doing it for us in the feedback, not bad, not bad. And there's a lot of quality. If you're looking for show news, if you're looking for casting news, if you're looking for season three speculation, if you're looking for character analysis and whatnot, it's all right here. It's all right here. So I figure we just jump right in, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
These were all missives sent to us at dhs@baldmove.com. Do not send email there until next season, because we don't usually monitor these addresses in between. But you can still get in some discussion on the forums, forums.baldmove.com. If you got to get something out, I'd suggest using that outlet. First up, Esoteric Eric, our buddy, says, you know, we've had a monster man this whole season, this whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Quaid has been unmasked as a monster man. Eric did the monster math. I live for this kind of shit, and I'm so glad he sent it in. So I was thinking about when A-Train was training with his brother, who said the A-Train needs something like 10,000 calories per hour to maintain his metabolism. Which got me wondering if the other soups need some kind of crazy high caloric intake too. For example, how much food energy would it take for Homelander to laser a large crowd from front to back?
Yeah.
Considering we're mostly water and use that to do the math, it takes about 10,000 calories to laser each body. And that's if you could transfer the energy perfectly, which of course is not possible. There's laws of thermodynamics that must be obeyed. It's not optional.
His ass is just those copper fins. It's all just heat sink back there.
Yeah, you got to dissipate all that waste heat, man.
Absolutely.
It'd probably take longer, too. So if you killed 500 people in that scene, it's safe to say he burned more than 50 million calories with his laser, a la Dr. Evil. That's a lot of whole milk to drink. You know, that's always the problem with superheroes, is any of them, especially that you know, project this amount of energy. Mm-hmm. Is like, where does that fucking energy come from, you know?
Well, Starlight, it's interesting because she's just kind of funneling energy, right?
Leeches and funnels, right. So she's got an external source, where Homelander, like, you know, how long could he keep that laser up until he's exhausted? How long could he fly before exhausted? Is unlimited? Like, I don't know. Like I said, I love this this kind of scientific stuff. And there's actually another infamous one that's later in the mailbag that we'll get to. But thanks for sending that in, Eric. Appreciate it. Brett D., longtime listener and club member, greetings from Australia. I was waiting for the right moment to send feedback about something that you might have missed in this week's episode of The Boys. I liked how in the relationship between Butcher and his father was juxtaposed with Homelander and Ryan. In this episode, Sam, Butcher's father, discusses how he made Butcher a tougher person that could handle the perils of life. It seemed to revel in the fact that he created a tough individual. He goes on to say that he was nothing like his brother, implying that his bad parenting helped him to be the man he is now. Homelander has a similar conversation with Becca regarding Ryan. He implores The fact that Ryan needs to be tougher to face the real world and Becca with her mothering wasn't providing that for him. I found an interesting parallel and I thought it worthy of discussion. Now, Brett just sent this in before episode 8 and we found out how the season ends. I think these parallels are even more interesting when you consider... Maybe we should step back. What are the odds that Butcher and Ryan end up together before this is all said and done?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, it's a satisfying story dynamic, certainly.
Yeah, I think going into season 3, the idea that Butcher is going to say no to this anti-Supes watchdog program and that he's just going to leave Ryan to the fate of the black suburban government-issued people, government-issued parents, I think that's very unlikely. Like,
yeah. He's going to be sitting in his, I don't know, fucking boy's castle or something and looking over at his coffee table and the sunglasses are sitting there and he's thinking, the sunglasses didn't quite sit right on my face. Something's wrong here. Oh, it's Ryan.
Yeah. He's going to have to, like, this the end of the season, all of the boys kind of scatter to the wind. And it's going to be interesting to see in season 3 how they bring all those back together. If they all come back together, I assume they will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Huey being with Newman is interesting because that's like he is the only one of them to not explicitly escape what seems to be the main plot going forward.
Yeah.
Everybody else is done. Their motivations are done. You know, they could go on and do bigger and better things, but they're not gonna.
They're not. Yeah. I have some news on that front about season 3 and what the plot lines are going to be because they've broken the story already. I'll save that until later for people who don't want
potential
spoilers.
Should we set up a specific spoiler section maybe?
Yeah.
That like has all the casting news and all that stuff. We'll save. Can we say that we'll save any potential casting news and confirm season 3 developments to later?
Yeah.
And we'll let you know before we get them. Okay.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Jack Hendrick, moving on. The headless statue in the conference room is none other than the late Translucent, to which I slap my head and say, damn it, why? Why did I not get that?
Yeah.
So, and this is this week's Sugarfish. I had 17 different people let me know that because it is like it's a real head slapper. I'm so sorry. This is what happens when you have screeners and embargoes and you can't look up things and yeah. It just make they took out a whole statue, knocked another one down, they left the head off. What's going on there at Vought? But there was so much to make excuses for myself, there's so much turnover in the Seven that I thought, like, maybe, I mean, why the hell is Translucent still there?
Yeah, I mean, you got Lamplighter, who wants to see himself still on the statue, and he's light years. He's living in the 30s, man. He's living in ages ago.
Yeah, what the shit? So maybe that's the thing. They just haven't caught up to all. Like, Lamplighter was a planned obsolescence, and everything else just was, either untimely death or sexual assault / harassment motivated scandal.
I almost said he's living in the 20s, but then I realized we're living in the 20s.
We are living in the 20s. We're in the roaring fucking 20s, which, if you've paid attention to history, should be very frightening. Very frightening. So thanks for that, Jack, and everybody else. I appreciate the correction. Jamie C., curious about your guys' thoughts on Lamplighter's death. I couldn't help but wonder if he knew more about the suit-proof cell on 42D than he let on. Did he know that physically breaking her out of the cell guarded pre-evacuation would have been impossible for him and Huey, so he set off the fire alarm, knowing that that would result in emergency systems turning on flashing lights and starlight cell, and then knowing her power and that she'd be able to escape? I feel like it's so... The question is, did he go out in an intentional blaze of glory, or was it a purely selfish wanting to end his life in front of the statue / the boredom?
It felt to me like it was purely selfish, and that it was just a happy accident that it also let her out of her cell.
Yeah, that's my thought too. Like, they really rewatching that, like when we did our live watch party on Sunday night, that was like the third time I saw that episode, and like it became so clear, like when you look at his, when you know that he's going to set himself on fire, the performance and his dialogue and his actions and his kind of reckless, like, maybe guys with AKs come, maybe we get in, like it makes so much sense to reinterpret this as him doing the suicidal thing. So I guess I err on that he's kind of a shit the kind of guy that, like, hooks up with underage women at the tower, I don't think there's any heroism there, but hey, maybe I'm wrong. Justin said, did you notice the radicalized youth at the beginning of this week's episode was Community's Fat Neil? Probably lost a game of Dungeons and Dragons before walking in that bodega. I knew I recognized his face from somewhere. This is Charlie Kuntz. And he's been in, like, I think he's been in Modern Family. But yeah, this is like the only thing I could, when I went through his IMDb, that I recognize him from is that episode of Community. So yeah, familiar face. I thought he actually was Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows.
He has IMDb a similar look. Thing.
Very similar kind of like structure.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for that, Justin. Carl D with some speculation. Could the chip / capsule that was removed from Starlight contain some kind of anti-V compound that Vought could use to control rogue soups?
I like it. Because we've been speculating, when you make the poison, you also make the antidote, if possible. And would that be out there? Yeah, it'd be an interesting sort of time bomb put into these characters.
Yeah, and they explicitly talked when, you know, Butcher squared off with Vought, they talked about how he would certainly have some kind of assurance.
Yeah.
Insurance policy for Homelander. And like, I've always thought that too. Like, you don't create the most powerful man in the world unless you've got a plan for dealing with him, especially if you're treating him like an employee, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I think that would be an interesting idea. I don't know whether it's in the chip or not, but like some way to depower Supes. Or there might even be like some kind of Jurassic Park. Do you remember that? I think this is more in the books than the TV show than the movies, but like the dinosaurs are genetically engineered to be all females so they couldn't reproduce, but they're also genetically engineered to have some kind of, their bodies couldn't generate this particular type of protein that had to be enriched in their diet. So if they wandered off the plantation, they would just die because their bodies would cease to function. It could be something like that too, that unless, you know, I don't know how you would do this, you know, with all the minor superheroes throughout, but like unless they get some kind of supplement effort once a month from Vought, they die, and it's something they could, you know, maybe they inject it into their food, maybe they put it in their water. It's just like one of those fail safes that like they don't even know. They don't even know to avoid it. You know, it's just like if they didn't get it, it would it's some kind of like dead internal dead man switch, essentially.
How would that work with a soup like who's the guy who loses the limbs and grows them back?
Oh, right. Gecko.
Gecko. How would it work with him? Couldn't he just like, oh, we've implanted something in your arm. Oh, yeah. Chop. Now yeah, I've got a new chip. Arm.
Although like the chip, if it's implanted the base of your neck, like.
Kimiko can take a broken neck and just heal
That's
it.
True.
I don't know, man. What are the limits
that
of Gecko's powers?
That is true. If you cut off Gecko's head, would he regrow a whole new body fast enough to like maintain vascularity, all that kind of stuff? I don't know. That's an interesting question. Because you're right. I would have thought that would be an instant death sentence. And then kind of like, you know, in Walking Dead, you get bit on the arm or leg to chop your leg off. You get bit on the torso or the head, you're fucked.
Yeah, you're done.
But yeah, Kimiko recovered from a severed spinal cord. So shit, I don't know.
In a matter of seconds.
Now, I guess the difference in that is like if your neck gets broke, isn't it that you stop breathing, but your heart still beats? Like your heart is like a completely self-contained thing. Like it doesn't need any communication from the brain to keep beating. So maybe like that circulation kept and the healing factor keeps going. But I don't know. That'd be an interesting thing to explore.
Is that why in Indiana Jones, when they rip the heart out and hold it up, it still beats?
That's right. The heart doesn't give a fuck. It doesn't know it's dead already. Carl D has one last final bit of tinfoil. Could Stan Edgar be Black Noir? I don't think
so. He got an awful lot of scarring, but maybe it healed. I don't know.
Well, not only that, but like, yeah, I guess.
He took an almond joy to the mouth.
I interpret that scarring as being kind of permanent in the way like Deadpool is like it. That scarring is permanent on him.
I did too, but I guess there's no reason to assume that.
John Carlos looked pretty baby faced. You know, doesn't have just widespread facial scarring anyway. Yeah. So yeah, probably not. Probably not. Sid writes in, I was thinking about your analysis regarding whether Homelander was lying to Becca or later changed his mind about Ryan needing a mother. I don't think he was lying, but I don't think he changed his mind either. I think Homelander agrees that Ryan needs a mother, but Homelander concludes Stormfront was the better mother that Ryan needs. We already know Homelander disagrees with how Becca is bringing up a son. I don't think Homelander thinks that Ryan needs his own mother. We know Homelander fills his needs with any available mother figure, but that's he. All right. Let me finish the email first. So it makes sense that he smiles when he agrees with Becca. He already plans to give Ryan a mother, just not the one she means in the conversation.
Good point.
Yeah, but like I don't know if that jives with the sequence of events, because like Homelander didn't see Stormfront as a mother figure until. Yeah, I don't know. You might be right. You might be right about that. And clearly, like, he does get the idea later on that, like, he needs a mom, but not this mom. I don't know that he deprecates the idea of having your own mom, because, he does seek mother figures everywhere. But I think he's I think he's self-aware enough to realize that that's messed up, right?
Maybe. I don't know, because there are several, you know, glances that he shoots Stormfront when she's saying shit like, oh, there are people who want to hunt the white race and destroy them. Like, where he's, like, semi-aware that that's, like, a crazy bullshit nothing of a theory, but also he just goes right along with it. It's momentary at best.
Plus, the thing that I was thinking of is, like, it does seem like he's self-aware enough to be ashamed of his, like, drinking milk, because when Ashley comes in to catch him, he acts like he's been caught jerking off or something.
True, true.
It's not like, oh, this is a normal thing that people do. You just drink breast milk, right?
Yeah. You
know, he's like, oh, God, and, like, he tries to hide it, and he's very embarrassed. And that's the only time I think I've seen him rattled in the whole fucking show.
Uh-huh.
In that particular kind of social way. So, like, that's the thing. Like, Homelander's not stupid. He's just living an experience that no one else can sympathize with, and he's gotten a bunch of things twisted up in his head.
Yeah.
But, like, if you think he's a fool, you know, I think you'll end up dead. Uh-huh. underestimating like that. But I don't know, possibly. Stephen from Rochester says, I was listening to your coverage of Butcher Baker and the Candlestick Maker, and I was struck by your comment about how a Stormfront, we had a great example of an offspring that wasn't a soup. Course with her sister, or sorry, her daughter dying of a ripe old age. If we buy that Homelander has a soup son without any Compound V shenanigans, and I'm not sure I buy that, I was thinking about if there could be an alternate explanation for why Homelander was able to have a soup offspring and Stormfront didn't. Are you ready to talk about reproductive biology? Are you ready to go back to seventh grade sex ed, Jim,
and mix it up with the soups? Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Superpower sex ed.
Women are born with all of their eggs that they'll ever have in their whole body, like all ready to go, which they maintain until puberty. The eggs form while she's still yet a fetus. I'm not sure if they're like fully matured, but I do know that, like, the number of cells that are eggs are something that's determined very, very young. You're essentially born with a quantity. Once you're out, you're done. Your body goes into menopause.
Yeah.
Contrast that to the males of the species in humans, where we make sperm. We're a sperm factory from the you know, puberty onwards. Like the quality of the sperm degrades as you get older, but we still keep making it. Could this, coupled with how we understand Compound V work, explain the difference? So I'm assuming Compound V alters the DNA of the person it's injected into. In most cases, this seems like powers would first manifest in children. Could it be that Compound V alters the DNA better in newly formed cells and not as well in already existing cells? This may explain why it takes a while for the growing child to have enough newly formed Compound V influence cells to reach a critical mass, develop superpowers, and why it's much more difficult to convert an adult who doesn't have as many new cells developing quite as quickly into a soup. So it could be that a woman's soup eggs are essentially untouched by Compound V. They're already formed and just hang out until used. However, males' soup sperms are constantly being regenerated, constantly refreshing themselves with that Compound V. I don't know. I mean, it seems like a plausible mechanism that you can only pass. Like, there's, and that kind of goes genetically. There's some things that only get passed on to X or Y chromosome, right? Mm. Like colorblindness, right? Isn't that something that can't be, because women can be colorblind. I just know it's the fact that, like, there's, like, for example, testicles are only carried by the Y gene. Otherwise, they stay up in your body and turn into ovaries. So I feel like that jives with my high school understanding of sexual reproduction and biology.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think it's he said, with a counterpoint, I have no idea how to explain the laser-eyed babies in the infancy ward of season one, because if it takes a while for them,
that's the first superpower you get, laser eyes.
Laser eyes, yeah, oh, that's the default. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
It's clones of Ryan. I don't know.
It's an interesting theory. If we have any bioscience scientists, send it in, and we'll get to it next season.
Yeah.
Or yeah, get to the forums. That's where you use your bioscience degree. Get to the forums and school us. Forums.baldmove.com. Brian P. You guys should pay homage and cover an episode of Supernatural. Eric Kripke's former show was is now taking a bow after 15 seasons on the air. Also want to point out that Supernatural's first five seasons were a full story arc that Eric had planned from the beginning. It's also probably logical that Du Bois has a similar time frame. Eric seems to be the type who actually wants to tell a long story, then move on completely. I had a lot of emails like this, Jim, and I gotta say, I think I'm talking myself into watching at least the first five seasons of Supernatural this winter, because everyone says it's this fun kind of pulpy show that's well thought out, has a pretty tight plot, and the guy had a 5-season blueprint, and he did it, and he got out. And then, of course, it went on for 10 more seasons, but
right.
I don't have to.
I'd be down to give it a shot. I don't know that I'm going to commit, oh, yes, I will watch all 5 seasons.
If I'm halfway through season five and this is dumb, then if it's like Boys-esque and it's like cleverness in the writing and the payoff to like plot details and characterizations and stuff, because like I said, I started this season with, I thought this thing had a lot of uphill battles. Like, I had to like Huey, I had to invest in like, you know, Homelander's relationship with the son. Like, there's a whole bunch of things I had to buy into, and I'll be damned they did it all. So
I will say, with a lot of what I know about season 3 now, or what I'm hearing about it, you might not even need to watch Supernatural to get a little bit of Supernatural going.
Oh, it's true. This is true.
Depending on what they do next season, but we'll get to that in the news. Little teaser.
Adam from New Zealand has some Anthony Starr love that he wants to share with us. Says, first of all, thanks for all the shows you've done in the past. I've been around for The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad. The list goes on. Always nice to hear from a longtime fan. But yes, Anthony Starr is destroying it. And yes, he is a Kiwi. He's a New Zealander, along with our man, Carl Urban. The show fills me with so much Kiwi pride, but I'd like to share a little reference that only Kiwis would truly appreciate, Anthony himself included. Before he hit it big in The Boys, even before Banshee, Anthony was in a very popular drama in New Zealand called Outrageous Fortune. Anyone out there who is keen to learn about the way Kiwis live and or take the piss out of themselves should seek it out. The show is popular enough that they made a prequel, West Side, which is currently airing its final season on Aotearoa. I'm sorry. My Maori is very weak. But to cut a long story, for 6 seasons, Starr played 2 characters. He was a pair of twin brothers, and he nailed it. Hence, when he proposed to nail himself in The Boys in season 2, episode 4, every Kiwi who watched had an additional LOL moment. Nice. Well, that's actually pretty fucking funny that this isn't that he did in Ewan McGregor season 3 Fargo turn. That's pretty cool.
What's that series called?
It's called Outrageous Fortune.
Fortune.
If you want to check that out. It's got to be streaming somewhere. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Set yourself to just, you know, get one of them ExpressVPN, set your location to Auckland. It'll be right up there on Netflix. No problem.
Could be.
but thanks for writing into that. I appreciate that. And I gotta say, like, I saw a lot of like behind the scenes photos with Anthony, and like, he seems like he was always having fun, man. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, wearing, Homelander pantyhose and doing all kinds of like fun little, like practical jokes and stuff. And seemed like he had a really good relationship. Did you know that Ryan was played by actually 2 actors, which a lot of times you see with children, because it helps make their work restrictions better and their school restrictions and all that stuff. But yeah, I guess he had a pretty good relationship with those 2 guys, which helps with the kind of heavy shit they were doing. Seems like a really good, nice guy, which is amazing because he plays just terrifying badasses, is what I know him for.
Yeah.
But maybe if you want to see the softer side, check out that Outrageous Fortune. Amy and Matt tag team to write us in and say, do you have any theories around Stormfront's last words? According to a translation we found, Stormfront says, it was so beautiful. These are what she's murmuring to herself when she's been Anakin Skywalker'd at the end.
In German.
She says, in German, it was so beautiful how the 3 of us sat there in the shade of an apple tree. Do you remember that day, Frederick? Chloe's arms out the car window. We found the perfect spot by the river in the shade of an apple tree. It was the first time that Chloe ate fresh apples. Was so happy. It was so wonderful. I wanted it to never end. Could this be the ramblings of a dying person, or is it something more?
I mean, Frederick?
That's Daddy Vaught.
Yeah. Sounds like perhaps a child they had together.
We know she had a child, yeah.
Right, is that the child we're privy to?
I think she referred to Chloe when she was like saying that this baby looked just like hers when she was like looking at, I think it was at the 6th episode, maybe the 7th episode.
Yeah, yeah. It could just be a moment they shared that she enjoyed way back when.
I interpret it very much as the ramblings of a dying person. Like, she's hallucinating. She's barely hanging on because of her superpowers. Now, I don't think Stormfront's dead.
No.
Like,
no.
Like they could literally Anakin Skywalker her in case. But,
yeah,
but
they say she's just, not dead.
Yeah, they say she's in some kind of hidden location. Which, you know, I mean, here's the thing about Vought. They lie. They lie all the time about everything. So, like, just because Homelander's saying it, reading it off a cue card, doesn't mean it's actually true. But, like, until... Look, someone is superpowered, that kind of regeneration. I just watched a woman recover from a fucking high vertebra neck snapping, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, until I see they're dead or they get atomized, I'm going to be looking for the okey-doke. So...
Yeah,
I'm assuming she's still alive and living some kind of horrified landmine superhero powered version of that. But I don't. Yeah, what other is, you know, like if I want to put my real imagery hat on, apples are, you know, associated with the Garden of Eden and satanic temptation, et cetera, et cetera. But like, what's there? She's a fucking Nazi,
right?
You know, what was like dig a little bit deeper into that basement and you get the Satan. Right?
Sure.
Anyway, Mike from St. Louis says, Homelander sad, alone, jerking on a skyscraper. Seriously thought that would end with him shooting his load through the top of the Chrysler building or something, right? Like that scene in Hancock where he shoots a shotgun blast through his roof. Once again, the boys surprised me with going for substance over shock value. Great show, great season. Something I found out in between us recording the last episode and this weekend was apparently that was a scene cut from season one.
Yeah, you said that on the stream the other day, and I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, the Amazon said that this is just too crazy for the show that had man-dolphin sex.
Well, that's the thing. You just...
Or implied man-dolphin sex.
You just said, like, I'm glad they went for substance over shock value. Because they didn't do the cum shot landing in a building. I'm like, that scene is still shocking as hell. Like,
yeah, I was just thinking, like, you know, like the police every year, like during New Year's, like, you know, don't shoot your guns in the air because what must go up must fall. Like, you imagine, you know, just sitting there, you get shot by a super load in a ballistic arc.
I mean,
coming out of low Earth orbit.
Yeah, that would definitely be more shocking. But what they did was not shocking.
Gary B says, I have an idea of what I'd like to see in season three, and I want to see if you'd agree with this, but I actually like to see the writers advance the story a bit between seasons and give us a bit of a time jump, anywhere between 3 to 5 years or so. Ooh boy. Ooh boy. Let's read and see how this works out. A lot of the main plot lines of the first two seasons more or less came to a somewhat end in this finale, leaving most of our characters without a sense of urgency in their stories, as was the case in the end of season one. Butcher's story with Becca came to a tragic end with Ryan in the protection of the CIA. We see the boys move from vigilante group to a somewhat legitimate branch of the CIA. We have Huey begin a career assisting Congressman Newman. We have the Seven in a state of stalemate between Homelander and the Maeve Starlight Axis. I feel like these relative points of comfort for the cast affords the writers that opportunity to advance the story. For instance, if we pass a few years between seasons, we can see how ingrained the boys have become within the CIA, fully integrated and functional, and immediately seeing how that operates. We can fully see how the relationship between Frenchie and Kimiko has evolved and see the two easily able to communicate. We'll be able to see or pick up with a new or now young teenage Ryan and see how he's coped with a few years of honing and controlling his superpowers and dealing with the death of his mother. Within the Seven, we could also see a few years have how the Cold War within their ranks have impacted the organization and Vought. All to have that break in season three. We could have a plot with Huey, now amongst the staff of Congressman Newman, who could be running for much higher office, such as Senate, cabinet seat on the cabinet, POTUS, for example, with her powers unbeknownst to him. That's kind of a joke, but I can only imagine a situation where Huey finds himself in the same situation campaign Morty does in season three of Rick and Morty. What do you think of Gary's thought here about a time jump in the boys?
I don't think it's impossible. And you're right. A lot of people are set up for that, but that seems like an awful long time to not deal with some of the fallout from season two. Like, I don't know. Is it going to take 3 years to spin up this anti-soup, or I guess, you know, soup affairs department? Is it going to take 3 years for Homelander to say enough is enough on this stalemate? I want to do what I want to do. Can Homelander and Butcher remain mortal enemies for 3 years without Homelander trying to kill him? Is he going to just let his son be gone for 3 years? Like, Vought can hide Ryan for 3 years? I'm not sure about that. Like,
well, it's just the blackmail that Maeve has got over him. That's the thing that, like, I don't know. Because I feel like I used to think that time skips like this were fraught. Because, like, the shows I can think of doing them didn't do them very well. But then, you know, David Simon's The Deuce did a 10-year time jump between every fucking season. And it was beautiful for this reason. Because every time you left the season, the characters were either in a nice stable place or in a very clear trajectory. So when you caught up with them 5 or 10 years later, you're like, well, of course, you know, Candy was doing this. Now she's going to be doing this because blah. And they are very well set up here. And I also, The Walking Dead in season 9 did a really good time jump.
Yeah.
The Expanse has done 2 time jumps now. One in the middle of a season that, like, at first, like, hit me, like, I don't fucking like this because what happened to this character? What happened to this character? What did, you know, it didn't really matter. So I'm open to it. And
yeah, but you're right. It's Homelander. Homelander is the biggest problem with that because I don't think he's the kind of guy who's patient enough to sit around having just been bested by everyone. He's a lunatic. He's a maniac. He's an egomaniac. He's
like a caged animal.
Yeah, you try and do too many years of him like that, and I just start to, like, not believe it.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a way to do it believably. I don't know.
And like I said, I don't know. Like, I don't think we're going to come back like we did this season where it's literally, like, the next day, you know, in media res. But, like, a year. I think they could get a lot of this done in, like, a year. You know, the boys is now fully spun up. Butcher's decided to get the band back together. It's more of a kind of a stable, ongoing thing. You know, Ryan is somewhat integrated with his new life. Homelander is starting, like, you know, I believably think that this would put him back on his heels a year, but he's still trying to, like, fight. You know, he's like that caged animal. He's trying all the locks. He's testing all the weak points and, you know, and Maeve. And so I don't know that you need a whole, like, 3 to 5 years, although I understand why people would want to see Ryan get a little bit older, kind of yada yada through that. But I don't know.
Many things where, like, super fledgling superheroes are starting to figure out their powers. Do we really need to see that again?
Yeah.
I mean, it's made more interesting under the guidance of Homelander, but now he's not under that guidance. So, like, do I want to see him in the laboratory shooting shit with his laser vision? No, not really.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I will say that, like, the Into the Spider-Verse was fun because you had Miles Morales, like, learning the ropes under an older, more mature Spider-Man. And that's I don't think I'd ever seen that dynamic before where you had, like, a super father figure, you know, showing him how to do it. And I think that would be kind of entertaining. But I guess it depends on how they rehabilitate Homelander, because the other way they could go with this is that Homelander, like, this is his rock bottom and he decides to, like, try to fix some of the thing. Like, he gets some super therapy.
Sure. That sounds like Homelander.
Wasn't someone joking on the stream Sunday night about, like, Vought needs to create an invulnerable, a well-nigh invulnerable therapist.
All right. Yeah.
Where it's like Homelander goes and, like, vaporizes him with his eyes and the smoke clears and he's still standing there, sitting there in his tweed jacket, or she's sitting there in a tweed jacket, like, okay, have we had enough of this outburst? Now please have your seat and let's resume the session. Like,
yeah, instead of translucent, it's like, the transmogrifier turns into smoke or something, right?
Yeah. The head shrinker. Cy writes in, longtime listener, first time writer. It's obviously very clear when the boys decide when there's a new threat, such as Congressman Victoria Newman, that has to be dealt with. Do you think they'll exclude Huey from it just to make sure he becomes an important asset as an inside guy, giving a lot of space to explore the Billy and Huey / Lenny plot, and giving Jack Quaid more acting scope and show that he can be just as dope as the other members of the boys? Yeah, I kind of, like, I was mocking the idea of him being this John Connor character. No, I kind of, I'm rooting for the Monster Man now, sure.
Yeah, that's how these things go. You know, you have the person on the inside who's good and true and righteous, and like they discover the plot, right? And they've got to, they have this big revelation, and then they've got to go, you know, work within that organization to try and weed out the bad actors. I expect that's roughly what's going to happen in season three.
Yeah. And I think that, like, it's too late to say that Victoria Newman is entirely in the good guy column. But to the extent that, like, because you know, like,
no,
the
I meant
reason
Huey.
I say that.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but I'm saying, like, because I was about to say, like, do we even know that Victoria is evil? You know?
We don't.
I think she's not good, at least in the same way that, like, Butcher is not good.
Sure.
But Butcher's not evil.
No.
Butcher does very bad things in an ends justify the means kind of way. So, like, and the only thing I can think of that's, like, just outright evil is, like, her popping that court stenographer. Like, you know, like, maybe the chairman of the committee is corrupt.
Uh-huh.
And we know the Vought doctor is corrupt. You know, like, he's got all kinds of sins to atone for.
I think
from what
the
we know
of
Seven, the
covered.
New A-Train. Yeah. But like I said, like, she's like the only one that's potentially just like truly innocent character. And, you know, fucking Butcher's willing to kill innocent people to get to accomplish his motives. But is she evil?
True.
I don't know. She could be just dark gray. And we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Brian K. says, Anthony Starr is a terrific actor, of course, with amazing range to evoke not only the horror and rage, but also the pity you feel towards his character. In a show with an embarrassment of riches in terms of acting talent, Starr is among the best. Season 3 should explore a bit more the tragedy of Homelander. I wonder what might have happened if Martha and Jonathan had found the foundling child turned the foundling child over to government authorities. Might Superman not have turned out similarly appalling? See Brightburn for more along those lines. Season 3 will certainly explore Victoria Newman's plans and machinations now that she's the czar of keeping the soups in check. I imagine that the escapees from that facility will have to be apprehended. What's her goal? Who's she working for? Is she a Compound V recipient? Isn't it ill-advised to continue to pop heads like what she did to the cult leader in the aftermath of blaming all that on Stormfront? Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I think that's something we overlook when speculating about this stuff, is Vought has to know the identity of every single soup, right? Except for the soup terrorists that Homelander is now creating. But like every
is it possible that Victoria got her hands? That was my suggestion. Maybe she got her hands on some of that illicit V.
It could be. Yeah. I suppose so. Assuming she's not, they would know the identity. Like they know Gecko. They know all of these soups that we've seen because they've created them.
Yeah,
but up until very recently.
Yeah, up until the last year or so, the Homelander's been doing this. I think they established. So, that does. But on the other hand, you could say that if the show establishes an exception, any character could be that exception.
Fair.
Vought knows everybody except for the few vials the Homelander just distribute out into the streets. Well, there you go. She got one of the vials. Bada bing, bada boom. There'd be more speculation about her perhaps being a captured asset, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think about, I got a couple other emails and this might be redundant, but this idea that could Homelander have a character redemption?
Yeah, I think it's possible to redeem any character damn near. Just some characters will take more convincing on the part of certainly myself, but I think the audience at large. You're going to have to do a lot to redeem Homelander. I didn't like we were streaming this, the watch party of this Sunday night. And I said, that's probably a full season type arc as opposed to an episode. He's just such an asshole and he's so terrible. And you almost need hours and hours of that therapy, right? For him to realize who he is and why it's bad and then change it. It's a whole process. So, and I don't think season three is the season that does it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because Anthony Starr's other show, Banshee, features, Banshee's a small town in Amish country. And one of the police officers on the squad was a former neo-Nazi that came from a whole family of neo-Nazis. And he's got all the tattoos, but he wears so he hides it because he's very ashamed of it. And, he actually does battle with his family, who's still a bunch of neo-Nazis. And look. I'm not going to ask you to feel sorry for a guy like Homelander. If that's a moral bend too far, but it does happen. It's not the norm that people with their heads completely up their asses in terms of ideology and worldviews. But hell, I came from a community where I had my head way up my ass about a lot of things and I was able to pull it out. And I don't think you should get a medal for it or be lauded, but that's an interesting story, and I do think that you should always give, there should be, some kind of, backdoor hope for those type of people.
Absolutely. More so in the real world. In storytelling, fiction, I don't care so much about this, but in the real world, you need to give people that avenue, because if you shut that door, it doesn't leave them any option to redeem, right? If you're saying, well, there is no redemption for me, it's already too late, they might as well lean into what they've got going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that just leads to bad people doing worse things.
To the extent that you believe in 21st century, not just America, but around the world, there's been types of people radicalized in certain beliefs. You kind of got to pull for them because else what do you do with all these people? Just write them off for the rest of their life, try to build walls and structures in society to contain them. But you hope to get everybody on the same page. And that could be an interesting thing, but it would, I think of what they did with Alfie Allen's character in Game of Thrones, the Reek character, they redeemed him from his low point. You can definitely do it, but you're right. It's not like a single episode. It's a season or two arc.
I mean, somebody cuts Huey off in traffic. That's a one episode redemption arc, right? Where they go and they apologize and they have a beer and it's fine. This is much different.
Yeah, this guy's got a lot more screws loose. And he's got to there's also, how can you say you wouldn't turn out like him if you had that kind of fantastic powers and things,
Sure.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, fuck, he's the most powerful person in the world. No one's been able to tell him no, and no one's been able to tell him no since he's an 11-year-old child. Mm-hmm. So the Kilgrave character, the purple man on that first season of Jessica Jones, You know, it's like he's a terrible shit evil character. But like one of the things you think about in that season of television is like, well, if you had those powers and you'd turned out like, you know, if you had that life, would you have turned out any better? But yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
For sure.
A lot of work to do. Josh F., the AOC senator analog is obviously either controlled opposition or she is the one somewhat controlling the narrative on her own. I think it's the latter, and here's why. So the controlled opposition is the angle of like, what if she is another level of control? Kind of in the same way that like you find out in the Matrix that Zion is another level of control the machines have, and she's essentially owned and operated by Vought. And to be controlled opposition, you don't have to be aware of the fact that you're controlled opposition. But let's dismiss that and consider Josh's main point. It makes sense that she's allowing Vought to continue being the evil dragon that she must continue to slay. Without a perceived oppressor, Vought, what good is a person whose career and life is based on fighting for the oppressed? I would submit that there's a lot you can do without a fictional corporation named Vought pulling the strings in the country and the world. But let's go with this. They also made it a point to show that she's running for re-election, which helps this theory since she needs an opposition to fight against more now than ever. On top of that, the things that she has done don't seem to be outcomes Vought would necessarily want to happen. She could have prevented a lot of this mess for them if they were controlling her actions. That's interesting. I also just want it to be that case because it makes the show much more interesting and truer to life of how humans think and how political power structures are built and maintained on all sides rather than just being propaganda feast for people who think everyone they don't like is either Nazi or a small town hick mind controlled by memes. I don't have a problem with her, you know, propping Vought up because she needs that dragon to slay. You know, in the same way that, like, I think that's true that there's a lot of hobby horses in political things that seem to only exist and don't get solved just so it can continue to be an issue that you can campaign on, you know?
I look at her actions in the courtroom now that we know she's the one exploding the heads, and I think, okay, well, it works from both angles, right? The fear is the thing that these people are going to be using. It's the tool that they're going to use to get their way. For her, it's the fear that, oh my God, there's a soup out there popping people's heads. We need to form the soup affairs team. And we need to like keep tabs on them and crack down on them and make sure, you know, they don't get out of hand. Whereas Vought says, oh my God, you need us more than ever. To the government, right? So if she is working for Vought, then they can say, look, here is the justification for why we need the soups and working with the government. Because this kind of shit, this rogue soup is out there, right? Destroying people's heads.
Yeah.
I don't know. And she might be aware of that. She might not be aware of that. I don't know.
Speaking of the courtroom head explosion, someone pointed out that like, it seems like her eyes milk over white when she blows up someone's head. That was established when she blew up Fresca Man.
Yeah.
And in the courtroom, when heads were exploding, we didn't see that. And someone mentioned someone brought that contradiction up during our live watch. I started thinking about it. What if Newman has a daughter that's got a superpower the way she does, in the same way that Homelander has Ryan?
She's teaching her to pop heads in that courtroom?
Yeah. Yeah, you got this. That's diabolical, fucking diabolical to have like an 11-year-old with binoculars across the street, like popping heads. But it would neatly explain it, and it would set a kind of sick parallel between Newman and her daughter, and Homelander and his son.
Okay, so if that's true, then you'd probably have to say she's working for Vought, right? Because of the way that the timeline with the soup stuff would work out. Like if she's got, so I'm going with the unaffected
right.
eggs, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And all this stuff, like all that seems like the Vought would have to know about it, and she'd either have to be working with them or they'd at least have to be allowing her to do what she's doing.
Nah, she split the vial with her daughter.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That's why she's got such a lame superpower. All she can do is pop heads.
Some of it.
Yeah. She split the vial 50-50. That's why they can only pop heads, and that's it. No, I you're right. Those seem to I've spun two mutually contradictory theories here, because you're right. There's no way 11 years ago she got V. So that, yeah, you're right.
Or if Vaughn knows, like Vaughn gave gave her daughter the vial, and like
controlled opposition, or maybe it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Like Vaughn thinks she's controlled opposition, but she's actually got her own plans to break free of the whole thing. She's going to go rogue. Yeah.
A lot of interesting possibilities there. I like what they're saying.
She's going to have a southern accent. She's going to steal people's powers by touching their bare skin. When we say going rogue, we literally mean going rogue going in this.
Okay. Yep.
Something for the Marvel fanboys and girls. Okay, let's move on to Matt C. Man, I love the Boys finale. To me, as I was watching it, I couldn't get over how each scene seemed to be topping the one before it. Like you sort of said in your recap, with this Boys, though this finale, the Boys hit a new gear, a gear that moved the show out of high pulp and squarely into something like high drama. The show is still pulp, of course, but wow, what new and surprising range. I have two questions. What is your favorite character-driven scenes? And also, what do you think would be the most interesting arc for season three? While you're thinking about that, I'm going to read his comments, which kind of dovetails with our conversation we just had. I couldn't get over the scene with Ryan and Homelander, where shocker, but not that much of a shocker, turns out Homelander for a moment acted like a real father, and a pretty good one at that. After he told his son that he had been afraid too and showed some vulnerability, then when his son hugged him, shit, the expression on Anthony Starr that he had on his face looking up the Stormfront, it was as if for the first time in his life, Homelander was receiving the one thing he never had but always wanted, real love and affection, free from fear. It's an amazing scene. And he's one of the ones hoping that Homelander gets a little bit of a redemption arc. The love of his son is the pure thing that he can chase and lead him out of this dark hole he's in.
He's going to have to get his son back first.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent one. Another one that I really like, actually, is Maeve's scene where she keeps calling Monster Man a twink. Because, like, the futility that she expresses there and how hard she's been trying. And then, you know, she does come back from that, right? It doesn't crush her, it doesn't break her. She then goes on to, you know, stalemate Homelander at the end.
But that was made possible by a weakness.
Yeah,
you know, like the status quo changed, and it shook herself out of her like learned helplessness and decided she's like, oh, I can strike here. So,
but the sentiment she's expressing, I think, is something a lot of us feel right now, you know, with the virus out there, and like things seem to be getting worse and worse. Things are piling on top, and there's a futility kind of feeling, I think, setting in with a lot of people. Like, how do you change something this big?
Yeah. Why do I bother doing anything when other people are going to just, you know, not give a shit about it? You know, why?
Yeah.
Why
it's mixed up in her sexuality. It's mixed up in all kinds of things, right? In that moment. It's a really good scene.
I really like the Butcher Edgar show off. Like, I thought that was a real like Machiavelli class act, and man, I can't wait to find more about Stan Edgar. He still is, like, to me, we got Chekhov's glasses. I want to see what happens when the man takes those things off and dares someone to punch him. I gotta see that. But yeah, like dovetailing that, like, I think the most interesting arc is like, it seems almost certain he will Butcher become a surrogate father figure for Ryan. And I can almost see, like, imagine him getting a call that, like, they just can't control Ryan. Like, he's the only guy, like, Ryan's the only guy that he'll listen, or Butcher's the only guy that Ryan will listen to. And they keep having to come, and he's like, you know, fine. Like, you know, why not just take the kid with me? You know, he's good asset on the anti-soup team. Like, that'd be cool. But also, I don't know how much they can get away with the boy's normal level of fucked upness in terms of an 11-year-old riding shotgun with that.
Especially as such an innocent, like, sweet 11-year-old, right?
Yeah, like they could roll. They could.
They could lean into
lean
it.
Into that. Yeah. Like almost Rick and Morty does, where it's like, yeah, this kid's 14. Deal with it. He's fucking a robot. He's doing this. He's doing
for
that.
Sure.
Like they can. You can definitely do some of that more transgressive material with older kids, because the reality is, like, as we found out, like, there's been, you know, like, what, Big Mouth and P-E-N I-15 and like Rick and Morty, like something we maybe forgotten as adults. Adolescents are disgusting people. A bunch of horny perverts that, like, you know, like the things we joke about, the things we laugh about, the things that gets us off is weird and twist. It's like, yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe some people had the perfect Barbie and Ken growing up, but I sure as shit didn't. So,
no.
Yeah, have Ryan be a little bit fucked up, but, like, with a heart of gold.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this show is, right? That's what
sure.
the boys are. So I'd like to see that as a hook. You know, give Butcher a crack at being a super dad. John writes in, the boys have grown on me and I'm looking forward to next season and the season finale with Homelander whacking off from atop the Empire State Building. I was reminded of a science fiction short story I read a long time ago. Its author speculated about if Superman were a real person in our world. You are referring to the classic Larry Niven 1969 giggity essay called Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex. And I highly, highly encourage anyone to look it up. It's free online to see what a very well-respected science fiction author gets up to when he starts doing boy speculation. It's all pretty funny. In this, Niven speculates every cell in Superman's body would necessarily have to possess super abilities in measure to the whole being, right?
Yeah.
Being an indestructible, able to, I mean, they show that in the movies. Like, one thread of Superman's hair is holding up, like, a ton mm-hmm. or something in the Superman Museum. Like, this is explicit, all right? He's just doing the math. He says his sperm should be indestructible and capable of flight. So the story envisioned his ejaculated sperm just flying around New York City aggressively trying to impregnate every woman it finds. Do you think the boys authors or the writers, the boys have laughed about this type of subplot? I would find it hard to believe what is his name? Who wrote this fucking book?
Garth Ennis.
Ennis. Yeah. That Garth Ennis or Eric Pritke, that they haven't seen this, because it's like a pretty famous, like, if you're into comic books at all, you will have come across this essay at some point.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but yeah, I mean, they're leaning as far into this stuff as they can, I think, probably in the writer's room. And then probably paring it back from some of the crazier ideas they have, honestly.
Right. Yeah. Like, here's what we want to do. What can we get away with?
What can we get away with? And like, both from a storytelling standpoint and also from a network, from a television standpoint.
Because you also don't want it to get so serious that people can't take it serious anymore. And The boys kind of like wavers on that line anyway. And I feel like the last three episodes kind of, like people are saying, elevated it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is almost like, this is not just pulp. It's also like, shit, good action, good characters, good plot. Like, that's what you need to be a great series, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, too much super sperm and you get Rapper's Delight, not the boys. Okay, Lauren Adams, do you guys think about what the soup names would be for the ones who don't have ones yet? Like, for example, the guy with the super acidic vomit, or Cindy, or Stan Edgar. I've been thinking about what Victoria Newman's soup name would be, and I've decided that in my version of facts, she would be known as Headcanon.
Okay, I like it.
That's a pretty fucking good name.
I want the vomit guy to be named The Soup, like S-O-U-P.
Yeah. I was thinking Bile.
Okay, Bile's good.
His name is Bile. Cindy, the Crush is what I came, like, I was thinking Crush. Stan Edgar,
main,
I don't know.
Main Squeeze for Cindy.
The Main Squeeze, there you go. Stan Edgar, I don't know, like, he doesn't have any superpowers other than, you know, being ruthless. I can't think of any. I have to know his superpower, because otherwise I'm just coming up with names of like the CEO, the chief, the head accountant, man in black, you know, Man yeah. is black. I don't know. Hadfield writes in, I never understood the reason the church, he's talking about the Church of the Collective here, loves Fresca so much, and I'm still not sure I do, but I noticed something with Stan in the latest episode. While Stan does refuse the Fresca, it's nasty stuff, when he meets with the church leader. However, later on, when he meets Butcher in the high rise, he creates his own Fresca. The waiter squeezes a lime into a glass of ice and then pours water over it. I'm not smart enough to understand the symbolism, but I'll leave it to you to discuss.
That's hardly a Fresca. If he got out like a big grapefruit squeezer and was like going to town with it.
As I've come to realize, because I drank a Fresca on our live stream, which, by the way, we refer to these lives. We every Sunday night at 8 o'clock Eastern, we do Sci-Fi Sundays at twitch.tv/baldmove, where we watch a couple episodes of Star Trek, The Expanse. We've been watching The Boys. We're going to continue doing that at least through the end of this year. It's a lot of fun. But it's grapefruit citrus blend. And for whatever reason, it's loaded with artificial sweetener. It's not diet. It's just loaded with aspartame, and it's got that nasty kind of aftertaste. Otherwise, I think it's a nice, refreshing drink. I like lemon and lime infused water is just a thing. I don't know that there's there except for maybe there's a commentary on like, I don't like your kind of brainwashing and propaganda. I've got my own house blend that I prefer. Because Vought definitely peddles lies and delusions to the American people, right?
They certainly do a close-up on it. So I want to say there's something they're going for. Hmm. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know if I buy it.
They also want to take a run at predicting the theme of season 3 based on the first two seasons. Season 1 dealt with religion and how that can be a negative impact on our lives if we just have blind devotion and belief. Not just belief in God, but the belief that all supers are born and not created. Season 2 dealt with racism and how that's obviously bad. Based on Butcher and Stan's conversation and the high rise of the season 2 finale, I think season 3 will have the boys directly opposing capitalism and challenging the thought that money is the ultimate prize, even in lieu of the public's health and well-being. Curious on your thoughts, and I want to give you an opportunity to write an outline for season 3, assuming this is the case. I'm not doing spec work, okay?
Look yeah, here. Pay us at Look least here. Scale. Come on.
Look here, I've got the getaway car warmed up outside the Department of Homeland Security. I'm about ready to make off. I'm not sticking around and doing homework, okay? But I love that idea because in the last 4 years, part of the zeitgeist has been this new leftist undercurrent in the left wing of American politics, where people, especially younger people, especially people like AOC and the squad are starting to like question, like, is this capitalism thing the end game of society? Is this the end all be all? What can we do like in a social democracy to maybe balance that a little bit better? And there hasn't been a lot of entertainment that has directly tackled those themes. And when you go back in American society, like you got to go back to like, shit like It's a Wonderful Life to get something that's like explicitly us rather than me, you know, and its core message.
And the first two seasons do feel like a bit of a setting of the table when it comes to that theme, right? Like Vought has been portrayed as something that is there to create wealth for the very few. And, you know, everything that happens with capitalism. And then if you look at the last scene of this season, which is Congresswoman Newman exploding the head of the church guy, you start to lean into that theme even more around politics, right? And the inherent connection we have between politics and money now
and
how that all works. And I think... yeah, they're definitely setting that up as a big factor for season 3, so why not lean into the capitalism angle as well?
Sure. Like I said, I think it's you know, if you've got an AOC analog and you just have her like, you know, like you abstract essentially her fight against Vought as like some kind of woke kind of movement thing, like that's just a really surface level engagement with this character archetype, right?
Yeah.
So I think you might be onto something there, Hadfield. But we'll see how it goes. Okay, we're about to get into the various slight spoilers for season three section, but before everyone goes, if anyone wants to maintain their spoiler-free status, super spoiler-free status, because these aren't like huge spoilers, it's casting news and a couple of plot points from Eric Pritke. But I just wanted to let you know the Bald Move is by no means shutting down now that The Boys is over. We still have Fargo season four we're in the middle of. If you like that show, we got really good coverage of that. If you're a sci-fi fan, one of the biggest shows around is coming back for season two, The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. We're going to have full coverage of that. That comes back at the end of October. We'll have our preview for season two out next week here. If you're listening to the Bald Move Pulp version of the podcast, it's just right there. You want to search for Bald Move Pulp, subscribe to that, and you can get it. And then, you know, looking forward to 2021, there's a lot of stuff coming down the pike. The Foundation series, big science fiction series, Lord of the Rings here, you know, Amazon Prime is going to take a stab at the Tolkien's universe. What's that going to look like? We're going to have a Game of Thrones spinoff maybe next year, maybe the year after. There's a lot of stuff coming down the pike. And not only that, but like we also do a lot of movie coverage as well. If you want to find our stuff, the number one place to find it, there's two podcasts, Bald Move Pulp, which is where we cover our superhero stuff, our sci-fi stuff, our fantasy stuff, the pulp stuff. You know what pulp means. And then we have Bald Move Prestige, where we cover more of the black tie type affairs, the prestige movies, the prestige series like Fargo, for example. So if you like our stuff, you can get all of it or fine tune your taste by subscribing to one of those two feeds. So yeah, it's now time to talk about spoilers. Mike from St. Louis. It looks like not only are we in for season three of The Boys, but there's been some interesting casting news already to come out. Jensen Ackles of Supernatural fame will be playing the off-mentioned Soldier Boy in season three. The original Soup seems to be a commentary on the Captain America archetype. And there's an IGN article that they linked with this casting news. Curious what your thoughts are about the implications of this character popping up and potentially playing a big role in season three. I wonder if he has connections to Stormfront, being they're from the same era and have lived much longer than normal lifespans.
Okay, with Captain America's connection to Nazis, that might make a little bit of sense. But
yeah, like would they subvert Captain America and have, because like, you know, Captain America in the Marvel, especially in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is just like this wholly ambiguously incorruptibly good person. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just the best, right?
Yeah.
Did they subvert that, or did they already had this Liberty come Stormfront come neo-Nazi, like? It's almost like a subversion just to have a purely good character, old school character.
Uh-huh.
We got Stormfront. But yeah, I don't know. Let's move on. Also would love to hear what you think about the announced spinoff series. The concept doesn't enthuse me, but curious to see what you guys think. So this is The Boys spinoff. What do you know about this, Jim?
So I read in an article somewhere just now that the untitled spinoff, although I've heard maybe it's going to be called G-Men, which I guess is a faction in The Boys comics, but so far from what I understand it's untitled, but it's going to be written by the executive producer of The Boys, Craig Rosenberg. It's set at America's only college exclusively for young superheroes, which is run by a shady corporation, Vought International, which we obviously know.
They don't say.
Like the parent show, the spinoff is expected to be very TVMA series, described as part college show and part Hunger Games, that follows the lives of hormonal competitive soups as they put their physical, sexual, and moral boundaries to the test, competing for the best contracts in the best cities. This sounds like garbage. I have zero interest in watching Riverdale with superpowers. Riverdale was kind of cool in season one. I just don't have any interest in this whatsoever.
What if it's like something like American Vandal, though, where it's like it uses the guise of like a young adult kind of thing to do something else with it? Like, because like the TVMA is not compatible with young adult stuff, right? I guess things are
everything
get pretty
I've
sexy
about
and steamy
this.
In Riverdale, but it's all kind of PG-13 style. Like, if this is just toned down YA boys, then yeah, it's bullshit.
This just isn't what I'm in The Boys for. I'm in it for social commentary and over the top, like, gore and absurdity. And this thing, okay, so they start losing me at, like, hey, this is the Young X-Men Academy thing. Then they really lose me when it says it follows the lives of hormonal competitive soups as they put their physical, sexual, and moral boundaries to the test. Well, okay, maybe this is going to be the exploration, like we were talking about, of Ryan, right? Like, okay, what does it look like when you're a superpowered teenager? It's, but God, it's just, it doesn't seem interesting to me. It seems like it's a one-trick pony. I really have to talk myself into watching something like that. But,
or like I said, it's like, well, what if it's that, but nothing like that? You know, like, what if it's like a complete subversion? And there's enough of the boys' DNA that, like, I could see them using, like, the young, you know, the young adult as a sabo for the round that they're trying to deliver, right? You know, and some, like, yeah, you know, boys uses comic books as a way to deliver its social commentary. Like, it's possible. And the TVMA is something you don't usually see with YA, although that's, like, starting to be less the case. You know, isn't, like, HBO's Euphoria kind of made for young adults, and it actually treats them as they are young adults? You know, they're having sex, they're doing drugs, they're doing, like, adult shit. As much as it might make adults and actual adults uncomfortable, it's happening. But yeah, I have to really talk myself into it. I'm like, that seems like a hard pass for me.
It just, like, feels forced. It's like, okay, we got the boys, we want to do more of the boys. How do we do more of the boys without actually just making 8 seasons a year of this thing, right? Without running our original concept into the ground. Oh, I know, let's do the other X-Men thing that they
I'll say this, it's a better idea than, like, The Walking Dead, which is to endlessly spin off the exact same fucking concept with just different characters in different locations.
I mean, at least The Walking Dead waited West Coast, five seasons. But yeah, you're right. I you don't want the same thing over and over again. But this feels like Saved by the Bell, the college years, plus Riverdale, plus...
That's exactly what it sounds
the
like.
The soups.
Yeah.
And I'm not into it at all.
Yeah.
No, maybe I'll change my mind. That. Maybe I'll see it and I'll go, like, hell yeah, this is awesome. We'll have to cross that bridge when we get there.
You mentioned one other thing. You mentioned a couple other things that you had saw in some of your research for, like, season 3 points. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So another casting note, they wanted to get Jeffrey Dean Morgan in to season 3, and he was keen on it too. He was actually petitioning to be part of it. And I guess I haven't seen Supernatural, but I guess he's, like, one of the main stars from season 1.
Yeah. Supposedly a good dude too. Like, he plays like a good guy.
So this would be, like, between him and Jensen Ackles, I guess, a little bit of a Supernatural reunion kind of thing.
Because he plays the dad of one of them, I think. It might even be him.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't seen it. But so there's that. And that's being thrown into question now because of COVID stuff. They had to postpone shooting. And he's got to film, I guess, the last season of Walking Dead.
Sure,
so there might be some
pushed like 9 months behind.
Yeah,
their shooting schedule. Yeah,
so who knows if that's going to happen? It's still a possibility. I think everybody involved is hoping that it will. So they'll make it happen if they can. Season three.
Jeffrey Morgan's an incredible actor.
And
like, it's super fun for the Supernatural fans if it's a reunion of sorts. Yeah, that'd be cool
for sure. I guess season 3 is going to start filming in February and ends in August. So there's probably not going to be boys next year. Probably looking at a 2022 release for the next boys.
Although it seems like that could be like a Expanse release schedule where they drop it like in late December.
Could be. And
it
depends on COVID, right?
Like, production though, too. Yeah.
February comes around, if we're like staring at numbers that cause us to shut down everything again, like,
sure.
Who knows?
If one of the cast gets major illness,
absolutely.
It could happen. It could happen. Who knows? Who knows this crazy world we're living in?
The good news is they've already broken the season 3 story, as I alluded to earlier. So they know kind of the major beats. And they're, I guess, in the process of writing that out.
Do you have those? Did you have any of those bullet points? Or
yeah. So Congresswoman Newman is going to have a big focus in next season, which I think, you know, kind of makes sense given what we saw.
Sure.
They're clearly leading us down that path. And the boys, here's something a little bit surprising I saw, is that the boys are going to be officially working for the CIA with a budget and offices and everything. So, like, them being scattered to the winds doesn't seem like it's either going to last very long, or like maybe we misinterpreted some of it. Like this was sort of a break before they get into this soup affairs sort of thing.
I mean, yeah, the only reason we weren't thinking that is because Butcher put on sunglasses and walked away without saying, sure, boss, I'll take that job.
And MM goes home to his family. It's like,
yeah.
And Huey says, I got to go work on myself. I'm going to go work with Congressman Warren. Yeah,
Frenchie's doing some Bonnie and Clyde shit with Kimiko. Like,
yeah. But apparently they're going to come back together.
It's not too hard. Yeah, yeah, you need a day job, fellas. You know, you should have gone for the, Armageddon deal, where you have all charges dropped against you and you have to pay taxes the rest of your life. Then you could just sit at home and play Dollhouse with your daughters, and you could run around with your hot superhero girlfriend. But like now, you got to work. You got to get that W-2. The government's offering. Got good benefits package. Mm-hmm. You gotta fight Homelander once in a while, which is bad for your health, but you know.
Yeah. And all this comes from an interview with Eric Kripke, so like this is pretty solid
right
info.
From the horse's mouth.
The final thing that I gleaned from that interview is that Stormfront is definitely not dead. They you know, kind of say as much in season two, but he definitely confirmed. He's got this whole thing on Twitter where I guess he's doing like a stump front. Hashtag stump front.
No.
So yeah, there's gonna be some suspended animation type stuff going on, or not suspended animation, but like life support sort of
suspended stanimation.
Yeah,
Edgar's got her hooked up.
So that's all I know about season three. But man, I'm looking forward to it.
Interesting. I wonder if they're keeping her alive, like for any other purpose other than like perfecting the adult Compound V serum. Because she's the early, you know, she's the early example that shows you can get it, you can make it happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, having said all that, talked about all the season three spoilers, casting news. That is the end of this podcast. Don't forget, we're not going away. We still got Fargo. We got Mandalorian coming up. We got The Expanse.
Yeah.
Speaking of Amazon Prime shows, it's coming up before Christmas.
December 16th.
Full coverage of it this year. Just a couple months away. Please subscribe to Bald Move Pulp if you like our pulp stuff, or Bald Move Prestige if you like it both. That way you don't have to worry about what show we're doing. You just know that you'll get all the pulpy or prestige goodness. Hope you guys do stick around, because we've enjoyed having you along for the ride. But if not, hopefully we'll see you back in season three for The Boys. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you next year.